This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
I've been trying Underbrush from Nathan and Sons, and it's not really regular gum. It's remineralizing chewing gum, basically an oral care routine in gum form. You brush in the morning and at night, but after lunch, there's a big gap where most of us do nothing for our teeth. Underbrush is made for that moment. Chew it for 5 to 10 minutes, spit it out, and move on. Or keep chewing it if you like the feel of it. It's made with something called hydroxyapatite. That's the same mineral your enamel is made from, and natural saps like mastic and spruce. So it has a firmer, really satisfying chew. The company is only a few years old, and the team is literally making, packing, and shipping gum every day. So if you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, check out Underbrush from Nathan & Sons. Check them out today at nathanandsons.com.
We're back, welcomed here again by Dor Tuong of Fire Knock today. How are you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing quite well. How about yourself?
I'm doing awesome. It's getting warmer. It is April 1st as we're recording this. I don't know what exactly it's going to post, but it's April 1st. The weather is just beautiful.
Not here.
Really?
37.
So today it's 45, 47, but yesterday it was hotter. The day before it was colder. This past Saturday was 82 degrees.
And then we have wind that will blow things down so much. I mean, yesterday, that's record wind coast of 60 miles per hour in the Chicago area.
Yeah. And where I teach, I don't know if it's the way, you know, where the school is on top of the mountain or what the deal is, but man, it's like, you're standing up there, you're walking into the building from the parking lot, and next thing you know, it's just, you're getting blown away. Like, you can't even walk straight without getting pushed side to side.
Well, that's normal. I mean, the world is changing. The globe is changing. I mean, it's just like, remember, change is the only constant.
Yeah, ain't that the truth? And what I've learned over time in my lifetime and looking at history in the past and stuff is nature always finds a way to balance itself out. You know,
like, oh, it has to, or else we are dead.
100%. You know, and we as humans, we look at ourselves as like the end all be all, right? And we're like, you know, we have this ability to create and to manipulate and to manufacture, but we've only been around for like one speck of time. I mean, the earth has been here for billions of years. And for us to think that we can fix it, manipulate it, ruin it is just honestly, for no other way to put it, it's like hilarious. To think that we as humans have so much control.
I spent quite a bit of time in the geology when I was in college just for the fun of it. You know, I used to have a very good system, and then I did learn a few things just for the fun of it. One of my roommates is a geologist. And then we talk about time and so on. But how do I say? We're just here for a speck of time. Yes, it was a long time, but I always say, you know, 100 years from now, it doesn't matter. I won't be around.
Right
now, you're my 60. I say, if you're lucky, give me 10 to 20 more years. I won't not be around.
I mean, if you want to put it in perspective, we're always talking about the world wars like they happened yesterday. We're about 100 years past the First World War now.
Yes, but we are only 90 years away from World War II.
Yeah, and it seems like, unfortunately, the way things are unfolding these days, we're closer to World War III than we were World War II.
Well, remember that. I don't know who said that. We know what World War IV we're going to fight with, sticks and stones.
That's right. I forget who said it, but it was, I know not what World War III will be fought with, but World War IV will be fought with sticks and stones, exactly. And, you know, this little intro that we're doing here today, it kind of stems from the conversation we were having off camera before this episode starts. And, you know, we shared some personal stuff that we don't have to share here on the, you know, on air. But one of the cool things that we have been talking about is how perception has changed over the last few decades, specifically when we're talking about schools and younger kids and the next generation coming up.
Which is also why a lot of our equipment is not well known. People believe in advertising, people are looking at stuff and have some personal knowledge. The sad part is that I remember when I was a kid, when I first came to the U.S. back in 1983, high school education, finished my high school education, is equivalent to a junior in American college. That's standard. education.
Yeah.
So that was pretty much. Of course, then things changed. I believe that my good buddy in Hong Kong is one of the education department. He told me that the majority of people would drop out on the third year high school. That means the junior high is where the standard education is.
Yeah.
But then if you went to a high school, which you confuse the hell out of me. I remember in Hong Kong, you know what the high school is called? College.
Really?
Yes. So when you graduate from college, you actually just finished your 5, 6, or 7 year of high school.
And then what, your college then is called university?
The university is called university.
Okay.
Back then, Hong Kong, there's 2+1.
Yeah.
Now there's a lot more.
You know, and I was listening to, my cousin sent me an awesome podcast this morning by, I think the podcast is, the podcast network is like the Stick Boys or something like that. One of the hosts is like an older gentleman, you know, I think he's in his 60s, if I'm not mistaken. And one of the cool things they were talking about today is how hunters have kind of lost touch with what hunting is really about, you know, and we've lost respect for the animals and we're doing it more for the trophy than we are for the hunt.
Well, you know, let me put it this way. If you don't have a GoPro or whatever camera on you, you should not be hunting, that kind of concept.
Yeah, you know, and it's almost like, don't get me wrong, I bring my camera out with me and I bring my GoPro and I try to record what I'm doing. But I always have this moment before I pick up my bow, or once I pick up my bow and an animal's coming in and I know that this is an animal that I want to shoot at. And I always have this instant in time where I think this animal's here. And if I make a good shot, it no longer will be. And I take a moment, I take a moment to appreciate that, you know, because it's like, yeah, we're out hunting and that's what we want to do. But you know, I feed my family with it and I feed whatever. And, you know, I use it and I don't disrespect it, but I'm ending another animal's life. And I make sure that I give it that moment to respect it and honor it, you know. And one of the cool things that they were talking about on the podcast was, and I'm not going to take credit for this, you know, this is something, man, I wish Wenzel, I think it was, one of the Wenzel gentlemen had said back in the day about how, you know, they went out hunting and they shot an elk, or maybe it was Fred. I don't remember. Anyway, they said they shot an elk and they saw it go down within sight. And one guy turned to the other and said, don't walk over to him. Let that elk die seeing the forest that he grew to love instead of having you be the last thing he sees. You know, and it's like, we're in a day and age now where you could pick up the phone and find the answer to anything you want. If you want to learn how to call deer, you can go to YouTube and you could look up how to call deer. If you want to learn how to turkey hunt, you could watch YouTube or, you know, watch whatever videos and you could learn how to hunt. But I feel like having those instantaneous gratifications, I feel like it takes away from a whole lot of what hunting was really meant to be.
Well, unfortunately, that's what I mean, is the instant gratification. I mean, since we're going to start today's podcast with the word knacks, which we finished with the last time on the, see, last time when we do talk about knacks, we talk about regular knacks. Yeah. And today I really want to start with the crossbow knacks. Because again, unfortunately, most people don't understand crossbow knacks are no longer crossbow knacks anymore.
What do you mean by
that? Yes, they are still crossbow knacks, but they don't behave, don't react. The specifications are no longer the same. I mean, I remember when I first introduced the crossbow, it was Jenning, Devastator.
Never heard of it.
It is used the same knock as the PSC Tech 15.
Was that also a 300, like a 300 diameter arrow?
Yes, a 300 diameter with a knot that would clip onto the string with no rail.
Okay, so the same, so it would clip on the same way like a compound arrow would?
It does.
Okay.
It was come out in the 1970s. Okay, let me get a few things out of the way so people understand. Sure. Since we're going to talk about crossbow knocks today. In the industry, that's known to be three major size crossbow arrow size. The first one is 270,000. That is the size that that Gold Team uses on the Crossfire, which is original made by Vapor. And then you got another size that's called a
285/83.
Right. So it depends on who made it. That 2,000 is pretty much where they've been. I mean, that's your full metal jacket crossbow and all your Carbon Express. And then the next one is your 300, which is technically your Gold Tip, your Black Eagle, your Firenock, your Victory, your normal Easterns. Then, of course, we do have other really weird, like Eastern used to make the 298. And then Eastern, the 2216 is the 303. And the 2019 is the 303. And the 2216 is the 6.
All right.
So that's how for it.
Now, real quick, while we're talking about bolt diameters, does a specific crossbow, let's use an Excalibur, for example, right?
Right.
An Excalibur comes with the executioner. Yeah. It comes with fire knock arrows?
No, it comes with the flat knock.
Gotcha. Yeah, flat knock. Gotcha. So, but they come with the executioner bolts, which I believe are 300 class arrows.
Correct. But all these have one common. Except there's two exceptions to the rule. They all have a 235 to 245,000 OD. So that if since they're maintaining, because you know why the crossbow arrows are 245, not more than 250,000 OD?
Wait a second. How can the OD be larger than the ID?
345,000.
Got 345. Okay.
You know why they are usually with that standard?
Because of the clearance of the string?
Mm-mm. Trigger box.
See, that's what I was about to ask you. Is, you know, because the wider, the thicker the arrow, or the bigger the diameter of the arrow, the higher it's going to sit. And I was going to ask you if that messes up the lining of the string.
That's the reason most crossbow arrows are between 345 and 335,000.
So they created essentially a standard and said, make the inside diameter whatever you want, but the outside has to be within this.
Yes. Okay. But then, of course, that's exception to this rule. Like Barnett come with a Harbor Ghost. It uses a 204,000 ID. Of course, nothing works.
You mean 304,000?
204,000.
So the 204 outside diameter?
Yes, but 150 spine shaft.
Jeez. So what, it was just too small? It was too small of a bolt?
No, they just increase the thickness of the wall. It's technically a Rampage 150. A Rampage 100, depends on how you find it.
150 spine. Man, you might as well just shoot a steel bolt at that point.
Well, for a crossbow, that actually is not a bad approach because you're actually going to true bolt. Mm-hmm. Now, as we said, that a true bolt, a crossbow arrow, and a regular arrow. Now, that was one critical fact. The reason I start with the Jennings Devastator, because it is a crossbow with a rail.
And what does it have, a rest?
This is very critical. I repeat this so many times, so all my customers ask me for what crossbow knock they use. They say, "No, do you make crossbow knock for so-and-so bow and so arrow?" I say, if you look at it, fire knock have three classes. The wide is fit at 285. The M and F will fit between 298 to 306. And the rest will fit easily 300.
And the M and the F, if I'm not mistaken, are relatively the same, except one's flat and one's half moon?
Correct. And you use two O-rings, which means that you can put the smallest O-ring in it and make it fit 298. You put the package largest with 303. And if you want to use 2216, you can actually email us. We'll give you the next size one to fit the 2216. If you recall, in Eastern's arrow sizes, the 22 and 16 means is 22/64 of an inch with 16,000ths of thickness. The reason that 22/19 and 22/16 is different by is that 3,000 thickness 3, 000, in wall, yeah. Which mm-hmm. means that since it minus it, you had to add 3,000 back.
And if from our conversations and everything we've been talking about, I would assume we would prefer the thinner wall versus the thicker wall for arrow behavior.
But the only thing problem with the crossbow is that the thinner wall at this moment don't have enough structural integrity. So thinner is not always better. Just like if you do thinner, you have to up the material to compensate without the structural integrity. Mm-hmm. Now, we at Fire Knock first started, I think most people, the reason I use Jennings Devastator to start because it is exception to all crossbow because it behaves like a vertical bow except it goes sideways. So it requires a knock.
Is that because it doesn't have a rail?
Correct. And then now this is part. A lot of people ask me, "Hey, Dodge, what knock should I use on this bow or this arrow and so on?" First of all, let's get all the rest of the knocks out of the way. They got 270,000, 285, 303, 306. Get them out of the way first.
Mm-hmm.
Because 99% of people were going to buy a 300,000 ID shaft because it's available. It's very easy.
Yeah. And I mean, you could pretty much, I mean, next to the 246, I would imagine the 300 is the next easiest to find components for.
Right. Because if you don't follow through, you pretty much, it's close to impossible to put in. I mean, I did make the Y knock to fit the 285 and 270. I do make the M knock with bigger O-rings. But the whole idea is that majority of people should fit the 300 because they are the normal arrow size unless you just absolutely love Carbon Express. Then you have to go to 270,000. And in most cases, I'm not going to help you. I can't.
I actually
Why did I say that?
Sorry, go ahead.
Because see, in the old days, on a crossbow, there is a vertical bogo sight with no rail. It is beyond critical that the knot actually clip onto the string and be tight.
I mean, it makes sense. Why? Because it can't go left or right, and it can't move. If it moves any bit, it's going to be offline.
Right. But then now we go into the 10 point, your Excalibur, or your Carbon Express days when every crossbow got a rail. That changed the whole story. Now, if your arrow is sitting on the track of the rail, do your string need to clip onto the knot? Answer is not exactly. In the case of like Excalibur, you notice that the down pressure of the string will guarantee the string is always being applied pressure on the knot and then onto the rail and behind the knot. Uh-huh. So you can technically use a flat knot. The flat knot was used because then no matter which way you load the arrow, the knot is not mistakenly loaded.
It's just one less thing to worry about.
But then what happened to your spine?
You don't know where it is, and you can't guarantee
that's the reason back then, for most of the crossbow, they don't tell you don't shoot over 20 yards. Because after that, you do not know. Now, of course, you can see the 10-point follow-through with also the quote-unquote flat knots. Until you start adding the speed. The moment you start adding speed, the connection between the knot and the string become more and more critical, isn't it? Because remember, when you have a high-speed cam, sometimes the string, when you lose with the low pressure, the arrow can be moving faster than the string when you launch it. You did hear me right. At some point of time, the arrow actually, after initiation of speed, can move faster than the string.
How is that possible?
Yes, that's possible. Because how the acceleration behaves. Because as having a cam, some part of the cam, the acceleration of what is being applied is actually move faster than the string. And that's a time gap.
Is it because the string is decelerating as the arrow is accelerating?
Nope, because how the cam applied to the draw curve of the cam.
Okay. Yeah, that one's messing up my brain a little bit. I'm not going to lie.
Yes, I understand that because that was also a problem too. And at the same time, we also learned one thing with high-speed camera. Is every single crossbow cam 100% identical when you give?
I'm going to say no, because 100% is almost nothing.
Because even you match the limbs at 100% at the maximum or at the minimum, in between the process, is the left and right exactly the same. That means when you deflate, say, you see the cam open at, say, 24 inch. Then you pull the cam at 20 inch. It's both limb exactly identical on left and right. Then at 18, 19, 16, all the way to 14. So that, in other words, the cam is moving together. Yes, they're opening together. But in the process, the cam, the left and right, although the same at terminal velocity, but the process of getting there may not be the same. And it's actually getting even more complicated when you have multiple limbs, like your split limb crossbow now.
That's very similar to what we were talking about. I forget what episode it was, or even if we talked about it in the episode. It might have been something we talked about off air. But just because, you know, you have a dozen arrow shafts that all weigh the same, it doesn't mean that every section of that shaft
behaved the same.
Is going to have the same distribution of weight. Just all because right. All of the shafts are the same weight doesn't mean it's balanced exactly the same.
Now, to make now ready for what the real kicker is, I actually wrote a pretty long article on every one of the catalog, and whenever a customer called me, say, what knot do I use? I say, two critical points. Does your crossbow have a rail? If the crossbow have a rail, the knot that clip onto, if your crossbow demand to use the knot that will clip onto the string, your knot must be loose to the string.
To allow the string to allow for
the difference.
Because
remember, the cam is not perfect.
Yes.
So your string is going to move like this over the knot. If your knot is super tight, what is going to happen? You're going to drag the arrow over the rail a few times before you finish.
It's going to go along for the ride, yeah.
Exactly. But then if you really do not have any rail or semi-railless like a Scorpion Death Stalker, you need that knot to be super tight because you have no reference point. You have no initial reference point.
I think of it the same way in that sense, like you said. I think of it the same as shooting a vertical bow.
Exactly the same as vertical because a lot of people didn't recognize that the front of the crossbow bow is as similar as you can imagine to an arrow rest on a railless situation. But then at the same time, if you really got a full rail, your entire rail is your launching track.
It almost works like a whisker biscuit, holding onto the arrow at all, the whole travel of the arrow.
Well, actually, it's even more than that because your spine direction of your arrow become more critical. Imagine if your arrow is flexed downwards. The moment you shot it, the tip of the arrow will flip straight up.
So let me ask you this. I think I know the answer to this already, but I'm just going to ask the question because if I were listening to this podcast, I'd probably have this question too. Does a crossbow that has a rail, are they a little bit more consistent by nature from shot to shot when compared to, say, a railless crossbow? Since, you know, it's almost
yes, I know. Okay. Actually, that's where the critical part is. Your knock connection become more critical on a non-rail crossbow. But at the same time, when you got a rail, there's more contact. Can you guarantee when the knock going down, the rail going down to that track, the pressure, everything, the contact are all 100% identical?
Guarantee? No. Do you hope? Yeah. But can you guarantee it?
You'll be close enough.
Yeah.
That's the reason a railer crossbow and a semi-railers and also a non-railed. I personally think that the railless crossbow in high speed have an edge.
Why is that?
But then your knock has to be perfect.
What gives it the edge?
Because you don't have the continuous variation of the friction of the rail, and you don't have a continuous variation of the contact between the rail and the knock and the string.
Now,
you added a lot more variables.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. And what I think of right away, and I don't know if, you know, our listeners would think of this or if anybody would even care, but does the friction of a, like, let's say you have two crossbows. Mm-hmm. They have the exact same specs. Let's just, you know, mm-hmm. but one is railed and one is railless. Mm-hmm. Would one have less energy once the arrow is completely off the crossbow than the other? Like, would the friction of the bolt on the rail cause the arrow to be a little bit slower than on a railless?
One thing that's absolute. The one on the rail will be slower, mm-hmm. but very minor. I mean, the easiest way to do it, you look at the, say, the Raven R10 compared to the to Centerpoint 400. They are technically the same cam, same riser. The difference is that one got the rail, the other do not rail. The Raven have no rail arrest, but the Centerpoint have railed. Now, that is where the difference is. With the Raven, if the string is 135,000, you want to use the UNOC to clip onto the string tight. In the Centerpoint, if the string is 135,000, you want to use the next one. You the want to make sure up? The knot is not tight.
Not tight. That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. Now, if you're shooting, I mean, it's supposed to be about knocks, but regardless, if you're shooting a crossbow that is a clip-on,
mm-hmm.
isn't that arrow, even though it's a railless and it's sitting on a rest, isn't there still going to be the same problem with the limbs and the cams not being 100% in sync? Isn't that arrow still going to go left and right?
Rest. Okay. It's now it behaves exactly like the vertical bow. Your horizontal, your vertical knock travel is all the stuff you're talking about now.
Right. And there is like on vertical bows, same issue, yes. same issue with the limbs and the cams and not being completely
exactly.
in sync.
Exactly.
Okay.
Because you are not 100%. I mean, you are close enough. That's the reason a lot of people with the vertical bow, just like we talk about, and then you find out the bow cannot tune well and the limb pressure seems the same. And then what do? Put a set of limb saver broadband on the trim limbs. You force the left and right limb to work the same. Now the only thing left is the upper and lower limb. Usually it's not that big a deal because you've got a longer string to work with. That's the reason you look at all crossbow, the wider the crossbow it is, the more forgiving it is, the better the power transfer.
Really? See, I would have thought the power transfer makes sense to me, but I would have thought a smaller crossbow has less string. The string's going to move less.
Mm-mm.
But then again, each movement is more of a percentage, which I think is what you were about to say.
Not just that. You're dealing with geometry now. Your knock angle. Think about it. Just like if you want to do a 3D tournament, do you really want to shoot a 12-inch XO bow? What would you pick? You won't even pick 31. You want to pick the 36, 37, isn't 36. It?
Yeah. Now, I always thought, I never knew that it was more forgiving in the shot. I always thought the reason you want a longer axle to axle for target or 3D is simply because it holds better on the target. I didn't realize
that. It's actually the angle of launch is much forgiving because when you're at that shallow of angle, any mistake is amplified. And the same thing with the knock. And then when imagine this, now when the string is moving, remember the string is soft, but is the string really that soft?
It doesn't feel soft when it hits your forearm.
Well, just think, no, I'm talking about structural integrity.
Right, yeah.
So the string had to deform significantly, isn't it? For you to put a knock for the narrow crossbow like the Raven. That's the reason for my customer who come to my shop and say, hey, Dodge, I want the most forgiving crossbow for the 150-yard shot. Yes, you did hear me right, 150-yard. Mm-hmm. They're going to put it on a tripod with my arrow bow 2 and mm-hmm. so on, with the swing blade on it, with the arrow wing 3. Yes, they can do a 150-yard shot.
100%. My thing, I don't even want to say gripe. My thing is I know 100% that a crossbow is capable of dropping an animal at that distance.
But my thing is how many,
right, and how many people are practicing that shot regularly.
And not to mention it should always be, because at that moment it's like, I can give you a handgun. You say you are good for 600 yards. Yes, for guys who are really that good, but not me, and at least not me.
Not me either. Then you got these guys, they're shooting a revolver upside down in a balloon 600 yards away or behind their back. Man, like, I have so much respect for, like, trick shot people. It's incredible.
Well, you know, if you do something, always, that was one thing my first, cook master teach me. You can do anything and definitely put enough effort and time and you repeat enough, things will automatically happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, of course, you know that what you want to do is possible. Then you do enough of it, it'll be actually possible now.
Of course.
But then now, let's go back to the nuts. A lot of people say, well, then how do I know what nut to use from your list? You got a ton of it. I say, first of all, let's ignore all crossbow that's over 500 feet per second because that's a different class. Assume we're looking at 490 and down. The reason I cut the 500 because at that moment, the string becomes so violent. Polycarbonate is not going to work.
That's where the aluminum knocks come correct. In over 500.
So now from that point onwards, it's now made of size and the rail. So for example, say, hey, I got a crossbow with no rail. Then instantly you say, okay, the knock must be loose. Then I say, measure your knock. If the knock say 168,000, then I'm saying you're out of luck. I don't make anything that's larger than 165,000. You want it loose, can't happen.
Yeah.
Then next thing I say, well, it's not going to work for you. I don't make anything that works. But then at the same time, if you really make the string larger than 165,000, the crossbow is not going to shoot right.
Right.
It's too big.
Now, on your website, one of the really cool things, and we'll touch on this more in depth, I think, when we get to talking about other stuff like your stabilizers and other things that you have available. Mm-hmm. But something that you have on your website that I think is really cool is the FACS search engine, I guess you could say.
Yes, I actually wrote that in Python, and you're running on three SQL engines.
And what's really cool about that is, I mean, a lot of people I talk to, they go, man, I really want to try some of the FireKnock stuff, but he has so many options. How do I know what to use? And
so
just go to the facts and that'll work great. And for choosing the proper components for your arrow makes it very easy. Do you have something like that for some, like on your website for someone who shoots crossbows and says, okay.
Oh, you bet. The FACS crossbow extension. If you pick crossbow, they will say someone go to the next, you will instantly, another drop down menu will come by. So you told them that you have an executioner. The system will now instantly add you another section and say, okay, you shoot executioner. That means that you're shooting a crossbow. The system would say, pick the crossbow that you want to use. Say it's a 10-point. It was before 2000 and so whatever. I will show you the J9. And when you start shooting this year's 10-point, because, you know, this is another thing. Don't look for that answer. You have a better answer and always use a caliper. Yeah. It's like when you go to a car dealer and say, oh, I got a Honda Accord. They instantly say, oh, it's a 15-inch rim. Is it?
No, caliper. Honestly, for anyone, and I used mine the other. Oh, it's right here. For anyone doing anything with their bow, whether you're building arrows, changing strings, reserving, it doesn't matter what it is. Having a caliper, and not just a plastic caliper, a nice digital caliper, will save you so much trouble.
Well, you know, when I was in Cyclotron, when I was in Cyclotron doing my graduate work, Mizuho 10-12-inch caliper is in the hundreds of dollars, and Whopper is $2. Now you can buy a Chinese caliper on Timu, Amazon, or even Walmart. We are talking $10 to $12.
Mm-hmm. And a Whopper.
If you are that cheap, we at FireKnock even sell you a high impact plastic caliper for under $5.
Mm-hmm. Except as a math teacher, I can tell you the skill of being able to use a ruler and a measuring tape are going lower and lower and lower. It's scary.
Well, but you know what? At the end of the day, you need that. I mean, I remember back when I was in college in engineering, they say, you know what the difference between quote-unquote a Japanese, a German, and an American engineer?
It's
how they look use their tools. You hold a boat, the Japanese look at it, stare at it, will say, whatever size that is. The German will pull a caliper. The American will put a caliper out and measure it. No, the German will put in one of those micrometers.
Yeah.
That was an engineering joke, okay?
No, of course. That my brother does HVAC, and he always says, man, I love engineers. They keep me in business.
Well, remember, all engineers can make that decision. It's great. But you need to know what the engineer was thinking when he was doing what that did. Fortunately, a lot of engineers must have some really bad days when they
were you know, my brother tells me all the time, I know we're getting a little off topic here, but my brother tells me all the time, the engineers, they write up these plans without thinking about how things work together. He goes, it looks great on paper until you go to install the pipes and all this stuff, and this shit can't work together. So he's like,
well,
you know,
that's
the engineer
not unusual, because remember, that's the reason I admire back when Honda, the Honda founder was still alive. Mm-hmm. You know what he did? He always threw his engineer into the field throw them into the factory. You know what that do?
It helps you understand the full picture.
Exactly. You got the full picture. So why would I design this? I remember when all the Honda engineer coming from racing on a Honda, what's the car? Is it not the NSX? On the Honda V6, they got 4 different sizes of engine block bolt. Why?
Couldn't tell you.
So that they can save a few grams here and there. Yes, in racing, go for it. But when you're fixing cars, all the freaking head bolts should be the same size.
Should be exactly the same size. I agree with you completely. And you know, it may seem like we're getting off topic, but this one little thing literally applies to anything you do in life.
Oh yes, actually,
if you have an idea of where you want to go, it makes the journey a hell of a lot easier. For me as a teacher, right? I teach middle school, but I've also taught algebra. I've taught geometry. I've taught trigonometry. So I understand where the kids are going. So being able to say, okay, guys, we're learning linear equations today and I'm going to take it one step further. I'm going to teach you how to do this. And they're going to go, do we need to know this year? Absolutely not. But at least when you do need to know it, it's not going to be the first time you ever see it. And for that, it's going to be that much easier for you when the time comes.
Well, actually, this is where the unfortunate part of how the archery industry goes. Now, remember, we talk about size and application and diameter. For the last 10 years, there is so many so-called different names of crossbow knocks come out. You know why they all come out? So that they are the only one who can sell you the knock to work with the crossbow they have.
Okay, that makes sense. So like every time someone comes out with a crossbow and their own arrow to go with that crossbow, they come out with their own knock and say, you have to use this knock for this crossbow.
Exactly. It's proprietary.
Marketing.
Anytime you go proprietary, it's wonderful from the residual sales value, repeat sales. I mean, I remember when I was talking about in course, that one people was going to GE's chairman and say, you know what? We should give away every single GE airplane engine. You say, why? As long as they sign a contract that all replacement repair will be our OEM value only. They do a fourth calculation, say, oh, it's a great idea.
Of course it's a great idea.
Except it never happened. Because if they do that, then all OEM parts are gone. Just like technically people can give you a car for free and say that every single part from that point onwards must be serviced by the manufacturer and the manufacturer parts and the manufacturer dealer only.
Yeah, I don't know that I would like that though, I'm going to be honest with you. I mean, you know, I just recently purchased a new pistol. I'm waiting for it to come in, actually, like real recently, because I'm selling my old one. And I kind of got into some conversations with my cousin, a couple other people, and I purchased a Kimber, one of their new compact carry pistols. But it's new, like relatively new. It's only been out a few months, and nobody except for Kimber and one company makes a holster for it. There's really no aftermarket stuff for it yet. And my cousin said, exactly. And my cousin said, why would you want to get that if there's nothing out there for it? I said, well, first off, I'm a DIY guy. I can make my own holster, no problem. I said, second, it's American made. I really wanted to get something American made. But third, the market's going to catch up. Yep. It'll be there. Now, with other things, like something that I couldn't build myself, like, for example, if I went out and bought a car and this car, for whatever reason, had a random size rim and only they made that size rim, chances are I'm not buying that car. Yep. You know what I mean? If I went to go buy a bow and they said, sure, here's the bow, but you can only use the stuff we make for it, I probably wouldn't even consider buying that bow anymore. Because what if I don't like what that company has to offer? Now I'm screwed. But
unfortunately, see, a lot of times, this is where I want to go into the nut section. Remember, the moment like a few companies pretty much say, if you don't use our nut, we void your warranty.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go back to the original law about warranty and manufacture. Okay, because I didn't went to law school. I didn't get my bar. But let's go to the original, the really fun lawsuit between Ford and Firestone and Bridgestone.
Oh, I can't wait to hear about this.
Remember, you may not remember, it was way, way back then when Ford made cars and it only come with Firestone tires. And Bridgestone want to go into the market. And Ford said, if you buy Bridgestone tires, we void the warranty.
Isn't that like a monopoly?
Exactly what happened. So then the law actually, after all the rulings, come down to, yes, the Ford is not responsible for the tires that you bought different from what they spec. That means that, imagine this. If you could say, imagine this, you bought a Ford car, you bought a, say, Bridgestone tires after 2 years, and you go in and say the engine is bad. What they have to prove now is that the engine is bad because of the tire. Then you can void that warranty. Otherwise, you cannot.
The only way they can void it is if it's if the tires themselves cause the issue. Now, I ran into this problem. I don't know. I'm not going to give a recent time, or I'm not going to give the company the bow. But just like everybody these days, I like to put custom strings on my bows. Mm-hmm. I think they work a little bit better. I think they don't stretch as much. I just think they're better quality. Well, mm-hmm. I had a bow of mine derail, and I had mm-hmm. to send it into the shop. And I called them and I said, my bow derailed. This happened multiple times now with your string and with this aftermarket string. If I send this bow to you guys, are you going to void the warranty because I have the string? And they said, well, we have to see. If it wasn't the string that caused it, then we'll still honor the warranty. Mm-hmm. So what they ended up saying was that it wasn't the string that caused the derailment, but it was a loose screw in my mod, and therefore it voided warranty. So I called up my bow dealer and I said, I'm sorry, but I was using their bow based on their specs, and their mod screw came loose and caused the cam string to derail. Isn't that a manufacturer defect in itself?
No, and no, he goes, actually, you cannot say that. Because see, now the problem is that they had to prove that the screw was not loose due to, you as a consumer had to prove that the screw was loose because when they give it to you, it was bad.
Well, long story short, I hear what you're saying. Long story short, I told my dealer, I said, I'm not paying that. Absolutely not. Not only that, they never called me. They never said, you know what? This isn't under warranty. If we repair it, you're going to have to pay. They didn't do any of that. They put it on themselves and sent it back. I said, I'm not paying a penny for this. He called the company back and he said, no, you guys need to take the charge off. I got a call 10 minutes later and they took care of it. You know, but it was.
See, let me put this way. It's a very difficult thing. You know, I got a marketing degree. I also mm-hmm. learned about customer service. Unfortunately, in the current, I know I'm going to the deep end. You have to understand, I just studied law a little bit. If you omitted any mistake in an open forum, there's no recovery.
You're saying if the bow company came out and said, yeah, the screw came loose and it was our fault and that's that, we'll take care of it. Then they have to cover it for everybody.
Not just that. They got a proof. Now they're opening a can of worms. That's the reason you notice 90% of the corporation and any lawsuit under the condition is that I will cover it, but no fault. Heard that before? That was the reason.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. And it's really unfortunate. Like, I wish we could snap a finger and go back to the days of word is bond.
No, it's not
going to
happen. I mean,
I know it's only getting worse. Everything's about a lawsuit. Like these days in school, right? If, let's say you write a kid up. Let's say they did something in class, and you know they're getting suspended. If the parents call the school and the school goes, okay, we have to bring this to our lawyers, and the lawyer says this won't hold up in court, it's like it never happened.
Mm-hmm.
It's unfortunate. Like everything falls on would this pass in court? Nope. Let's forget about it then. Rather than mm-hmm. doing the right thing. That's why, and not that this is what this podcast was supposed to be about, but that's why I really appreciate your 30-day money back, no questions asked guarantee. Somebody can take your arrows, go and shoot them, hit a rock, have the arrow shatter, and be like, you know what? I don't like these. And you can say, okay, no problem. Just return everything you have, no questions asked, here's your money back.
Yeah, because it's no point sweating on it if the person is that irresponsible. Do you really want to do business with them? So now you pay your fee in the minimum form, you lose a little bit, but then there's no argument.
Yep, and you could put your head down at night and sleep like a baby.
Exactly. Now, the reason I bring this up, because see, a lot of people keep asking me the same question. Would this not, with the knock that I got from FireKnock by warranty, the answer is that if you follow the specification as indicated, why would it void the warranty?
When you say that, you mean if the manual says use a half moon and you use a half moon, or if it says use a flat knock and you use a flat knock?
Or you use the size that based on our chart and it fits exactly the same, mm-hmm. why would it fail?
That's fair.
Because see, at the end of the day, this is how I see things. Why will you have a warranty claim if things work right? Second, if it is a mistake, whose mistake is it? Did you measure wrong? I mean, just like there's a tons of lawsuit on arrows, like people they don't check the arrow, they shoot, and then they hurt themselves. Now they want the arrow company to take the blame. Is it right?
Well, no. Well, that's why every arrow says flex before you shoot.
Right. But, you know, that is people don't have any common sense, which is normal today. When they make a mistake, they want somebody to pay for it. I mean, if you are a person of that caliber, it's only got no ethics. If that's the case, why are you hunting?
And hunting
is one of the most ethical things you can do.
If when done properly.
With the code of hunting.
When done properly, but there's also some of the most unethical people out there, unfortunately, as we were talking about it off air today.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, things happened, but the thing is, how do you, I remember one of my master in, when I learning, I mean, I got other skills. One of my masters, which I learned with, what's the thing called? Plumbing?
I'm sorry?
Plumbing?
Plumbing. Gotcha. You do everything. You literally do everything. Sorry. Anyway.
You see, take responsible what you do, and things work a lot easier. And prepare yourself for what can go wrong. You may be slower, but you end up faster.
Yep. Better job, less headache, better word of mouth.
In other words, get it done right the first time.
Yeah.
But then your skill level situation, can you do wrong? Absolutely. I mean, the word mistake come into play. Just like, I'll use one example. Like a customer come to my shop, load a brand new Mission Sub-1 XL. String the whole nine yards. I put a new string on it. Instead of using the original flat lash knot, I put a D3 knot on it. First shot, the blow up immediately. Is it my mistake? Is it his mistake? Is that anybody's make? Nope. It end up to be all of the above.
Gotcha.
Because I end up buying a new cam, new string, new cable, new axle, and then I try to shoot it with all those. Guess what? It blow buggy. But this time I got a camera.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. When you were designing, let's say, a new knock or something, like let's just talk in theory here. Let's say tomorrow a new inside diameter arrow is made, something that's different than what's out on the market. And you say, well, there's no way to alter any of my knocks to fit this. So now I need to create a new knock.
Yep, that's $60,000.
Do you call that bow company and say, listen, you put out something new. I would like to make a product for it. If I make it, is it going to be okay with your warranty? Like, do you communicate with companies?
That's not going to happen. Nobody's going to allow that. Nobody's going to want it. The industry, as we know it, they don't work with each other. They pretty much will tell you absolutely it's not going to happen. Unless you pay them with the money they want. In other words, they wanted you to do a licensing.
Either it's proprietary or they're going to get money from you regardless.
Right.
Okay.
But that's how the industry works. Yeah. Just like, imagine you got new tires. I mean, just like Apple come with new connectors. Everybody had to pay Apple first.
So
now, before I finish, I want to make sure everybody calm down so that people know how come the Sub-1 XL blow up. It took me a long time to find out. It is not the string. It is not the knock. It is not the cam. It's not the shooter. It's the situation and the design.
What do you mean?
That's exactly. I mean, you have to dig deep, deep, deep into this. Remember, it's a new string on a new on an old bow with a new cam, new cable, the whole nine yards. And it's a Sub-1 XL. What does a Sub-1 XL, which is majorly different from any single crossbow in the market?
No idea.
It's an ultra-high let-off crossbow.
Really? What's the point?
It's 85% let-off.
What's the point?
So that the trigger pull is the most crispy because it's not a lot of load on a trigger. Well, but that's besides the point about design.
Yeah.
And which I want to announce again and again, anybody who use a high let-off crossbow with a new string, you should always shoot that sucker with a moon knock a few times.
What happened when you were using a flat knock?
Not flat knock, a full containment knock.
You were using a full containment knock.
Which is a D3 knock. We grab the string. And when you get a string from any manufacturer, what does the string come in? A package about this big, and the string is folded like two or three times. So we pull the string all the way back in the trigger box. So today it's 85% off. I'm assuming the bow is 100 pounds. How many pound pressure is on the string? 15 pounds.
So the string was able to, when the crossbow was at full draw and there was less tension on the string, did it allow the string to bend where those kinks were?
Correct. And lift the arrow off the kink. And when the arrow is off the kink, what? The momentum, the inertia of the arrow, since it lift the arrow may not be able to come down. The cam was off the string.
So it's almost like it's essentially the same thing as dry firing the crossbow.
No, you dry fired it. You just, the string is off the cam. So why don't you use a moon knock at that moment? If the string is off, the string still have the moon knock to let the string move up and down. Mm-hmm. But then when you shoot the bow two or three times, the string is now straight. Right. Now you can put the full containment knot on it.
Now, is there, for someone who doesn't have the option of having multiple different knocks, could they just, let's say, string up the crossbow and just leave it alone for, say, a week and allow the tension of the limbs themselves to help the string rest or yes get or no. set?
The fact is that, I mean, theoretically, when the, I do not know. I actually okay. do not know.
Okay.
That's the reason for anyone to see a high-level crossbow always said, go ahead and shoot it with a moon knock. Or if you look at closer look, the design of the mission knock is a flat knock with two lips. So it's a flat with two lips up and down like this. So you let the string do this.
Inside of the knock.
At the same time, it does not grab the string and up and down. Now imagine, you got a full containment knot. The moment the string is up, you're going to do that to the, see that? The moment it go up, it's not going to go back down.
Right. It's just going to keep moving with it.
Yep. And that's the reason you got to clarify. Now, yeah. The critical part again, we have fine knocks, we make knocks in every single 10,000 variation. The smallest is 115, is for V knock. Then you go into the C knock, that's 125. And then the U knock is 135. The Q knock is 145. The J is 155. And the D3 is 165.
We're talking about the space between the, like,
wrong.
In like, other words, how like big the string diameter.
Space yes. you allow yeah. it to have.
Gotcha.
And that ideally is that the knot has to be quote unquote clamp no less than 3,000 on railless. And the knot should have no less than 3,000 for full rail. Can it be more? Answer is yes and no. On the loose one, you can be more. And for the tight one, you cannot be more. Otherwise, you crack the knot or you deform the knot. Your accuracy right. will suffer. And that's the reason that crossbow are so difficult. But at the same time, you will find exactly what you need, no less than a caliper. And look at our chart. It's that easy.
It's literally a 10-second thing that can save you so much headache and honestly, a lot of money. Because if that knock breaks and you dry fire your crossbow, we all know that that's not cheap.
Well,
to fix.
I thought you're $320 on a mission. I know that because I paid the first one. Because
you did it.
Yeah, because my customer did it the first one. Then I say, no worry, I'll fix it. Then I broke the second one.
You know, I remember you sharing another thing with me recently where you said you had a customer call and say, you know, they've been with you for many years. They've been buying your arrows. I think it was an arrow concept one. It could have been a two. I'm not sure. I don't remember specifically. But you said he called. He ordered another dozen. He went to go shoot them, gave you a call back a week later and said, Dorge, this is the worst dozen arrows I've ever had in my life. And you said, no problem. Let's figure out what happened. And long story short, you found out that there was an issue in the manufacturing factory. With you know, the consistency of the material and all that stuff, and you said, "Okay, no problem, my fault. I replace it. All good." You know, and then my
because
opinion,
you know
that's
you can't
business.
Control all elements,
right?
But the bottom line is that first of all, just like all situations, you need to find out what, why, and how, and then depends on who is responsible, and that's the end of it. Now, in right. case we find out when you buy from me, I'll take responsible,
yeah,
because you give me the privilege of serving you and selling you stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's not for you. It's not for you. We move on.
The one thing I've learned from you is as long as the people you're working with treat you with respect, you will always make a situation right. I've learned that.
It has to be, you know.
Time and time again.
You're not talking a guy that is, just remember, unlike others, if you are in your 20s, 30s, just come out, how much money you got? How much backing you got? Every single dime counts. You had to be, in some way, you had to be belligerent because you cannot afford it. Mm-hmm. But then when you're older like me, went through life, it's just like, I remember one time, when customers argue with me, I was so angry. I was grabbing dinner. My wife said, what's the big deal? I said, I know the guy's lying. I know I sent him two of them. He said, I only sent him one. You know what my wife said?
So what? Another one.
Yeah. And mark it. Be done with it. No point arguing with him. I said, but he was wrong. Then I just remember another thing. I was reading one of the Supreme Court Justice retirement paper. Justice are the most expensive thing that ever happened in law.
It's just, it's unfortunate. Like we said earlier, it's like, you know, I wish we can go back to a time where money really wasn't the center of everything. I really do.
In some way that it's not a matter of going back. We need to learn to live with it. Can you imagine a society like us without money? It would be very difficult to work.
Well, I think there was always value in something, right?
Well, of course. But then the question of how do you justify value and how do you control the value?
Right. You know, and I'm not a historian, so I don't know all of the facts going back to the beginning of time, but I do know that, you know, if somebody had a goat and somebody else had a sheep, they would trade them, you know, livestock for livestock. You know, if I had food and you had food.
Remember, we still do that. That's the reason there's barter.
Yes.
I mean, that's trade.
Yep.
But then that's based on relationship. It's on trust. Mm-hmm. It's on face-to-face or hand-on.
Yeah.
Or even in the case, I remember my son was playing video game. Even with that, you don't trade with just anybody, but 90% of the time you got cheated.
I mean, dude, you're sitting there playing with your wedding ring right now, right? Back in the day, a prenup was like, what? Why? Why do you need a prenup? Nowadays, it's like, shit, I'm not getting married without one. There's no trust anymore.
Well, it's not. First of all,
it drives me crazy.
Let me give you one of the best words that my anthropology professor gave us. In the old days, when you get married, you really don't need more than a few agreements. You know why? Most of them die before they are 40. Just think about what I just said.
That's true too. The life expectancy was half. You're not wrong, man. You know, it's just, I don't know. I wish we could get down to what really matters again. I think there are still a lot of great people out there. I think there are a lot of people who really pay attention to what really matters, the important things in life, and like, mm-hmm. don't let the little things bother them. Or even the big things, and it's like, what can I do other than work through it?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I mean, if you want to be a deer hunter, you better get used to, well, it didn't work out for me today. What could I do? Because if you expect to get out there and be successful on every single hunt, this is not the sport for you.
No.
It's not.
Just give you an idea. I always said, do you know what the least used equipment you ever bought in your entire life?
Hunting-wise or just in general?
Everything. The technical hunting, the deer hunting process, what is the least used equipment you ever had?
Your bow or your gun?
Your broadheads.
Mm.
How many broadheads you bought? How many deer killed? How many is in your junk pile?
Dude, I'm laughing my ass off because in the last 4 years, I've tried four different broadheads. And I still have...
Did you buy one, two, three?
Well, I buy three at a time, yeah, so I could fill my quiver. Like people, and granted, if this worked for people, like, so... be it. But for me, I don't like having mixed matched. I don't like having one arrow of one weight, one arrow of another, or this broadhead on this arrow and this broadhead on another. I'm very much, if I'm going to be shooting it at an animal, I need to know that it's perfect. Not mm-hmm. because I need the best and the most expensive and I got to be fancy. I need to know that it's going to function and it's going to work. And if I mm-hmm. don't have the exact same broadhead on every single arrow, how can I guarantee that the impact for each and every broadhead is going to be the same? I can't.
So I actually have a little bit disagreement with that because I notice a different situation, different broadhead do have different capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Just like I have, when I go into a hunt, I got different firearms on my arrows.
Really?
Yes, because I want the different function. Like right in the broad day, I want the target knock. In the early morning, I usually use a blinking knock. In the mm-hmm. evening, I use solid light.
But at least the knocks right now, I don't know if you're going to agree with this, but at least the knocks are the same weight and they're going to they're going to shoot the same.
They just have different functions.
Exactly. But in the case of a broadhead, for example, if you have a three blade and a two blade on two different...
Oh, no.
You know what I mean? So it's like, okay, if you want to make the argument, if somebody's out shooting a mechanical and, you know, they have a Rage on one arrow and a Beast broadhead on another, or whatever you want to use, chances are they're going to fly relatively the same. Okay, fine. But when you're coming to fixed blade, I feel like that opens a can of worms that.
Or that's more than a can of worms. It's a,
exactly.
It's a basket of crabs.
Yeah. So, originally, when we sat down for this episode, we had talked about half of the episode we're going to do crossbow knocks. The second half, we're going to get into lighted knocks. But mm-hmm. I don't think we have the time to get into lighted knocks today. And honestly, I really liked this episode specifically because we didn't have a huge topic to talk about. And we were able to talk about it in depth, you know, and we got a little off track, but for the most part that, you know, we stayed pretty on task on this one.
The more you think about it, when you really go hunt, the simple things is where really make a big deal. And the mistake, unfortunately, is catastrophic. So, you know, I mean, we are past an hour, so I'm going to close out the last part. Mm-hmm. When you really start shooting 500 feet per second crossbow, you think most plastic will actually work. Just like if you got white war tires and you really want to push them over 120 miles per hour, those tires will not last. Period. That's the reason we make a whole line of metal crossbow. They are equivalent to what we have except with wood plus. Like if you shoot a 230, a 225, we got C in the crossbow, be C plus. Mm-hmm. We shoot 135, the normal is U, and then the metal one will be U plus. when you should say 165, the normal is D3, and the metal one will be D+. Yeah. That's it.
Now,
because the polycarbonate just cannot handle that kind of pressure. Yeah. So we move into aluminum.
Now, the aluminum arrow, the aluminum Nox, obviously, that you need them for high speed. If you're shooting over 500
feet. High power.
High power, yeah. Are there any negative effects of using a metal Nox on a bowstring?
Yes and no. Depends on how the string is made and how the fit. Now, the major difference between a metal Nox and a polycarbonate is that, for example, you say a metal Nox is 135, okay? It will not fit the string of 137 because now the string has to match. You need to fit the string of 137 on the case of Raven because you need to clamp down 2,000. But then you also need to pass a throat of every 5,000 to 7,000. So now your string now has to give way of 9,000 in order for work. So, the string size and the knock become more and more critical because, see, a knock, a polycarbonate can be bigger. But the metal is not giving, so all the give is from the string.
So with a poly knock, there's a little bit of wiggle room.
There's a lot. It's quite a bit. Because for example, when I say 135, in the case of metal knock, if you got 135, you got 137, the string is compressed 2,000. Mm-hmm. Plus the opening five, the string is now compressed 7,000. In the case of polycarbonate, when the string is settled, the string can squeeze, the knot can give you extra 2,000. The metal will not.
Right. The metal doesn't give, the knock will.
So all the give is from the serving compression. If the serving can compress, what does that mean? You don't have a size anymore.
Right. I see. So in the case of a metal knock, it is imperative that you really know the diameter of your string serving where you're knocking.
Otherwise, your serving will be deformed to the much, if you become like a D shape or oval. Uh-huh. Then your accuracy of your arrow is going to be very much gone. And on top of that, the string is going to deform so much that your string serving can be cut because it's no longer maintaining its structural integrity. Now you've got a soft surface with a dimple. Guess what? You got cut.
That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
It's not that simple, but you know what? When you think through it, that's the only way to work.
Yeah. I mean, it is pretty simple, though. When you think about it, it is pretty simple. Metal doesn't give. It's less forgiving. It's got to be perfect. I mean, when you break it down, it's pretty straightforward.
Let me tell you the fun fact. When I first made the metal knocks, I was made out of 7075.
Mm-hmm.
Anodized. It's no good.
Did they break?
No, they're too hard.
Okay. And they broke strings?
They actually cut the string, even with smooth surface. Because 7075 is 80% string and hardness of stainless steel.
Mm-hmm.
I actually go back to 6061 T6. Now they're only, 25% strength of a stainless. And I don't use hard anodized. Use basic anodized. Because hard anodized give you a hard surface. Now we just coat it.
Sure.
So the anodizing and the aluminum actually gift a little.
Yeah. And it's all about learning, right? Like we talked this past week. And, at this point, by the time this episode comes out, hopefully I've passed the test. So I think I could talk about it here now. But by the time this episode airs, hopefully I have begun putting out my own arrows. Not my own arrows, but they're your arrows with my own little twist on them. Exactly, with my own little twist on them. And we were talking about how when I sent my arrows back to you, you pointed out a couple things that weren't terrible, but they weren't exact. And you said the next part of the test is if I can identify why it happened and how to avoid having it happen in the future. And I said, and my response to you was, so the test is still continuing. You said, not only is the test still continuing, the test is always ongoing because learning is always occurring.
And not to mention your customer is your best master, because if you don't do right, they don't slap you. They vote with their wallet.
Exactly. You know, like if you don't mind me sharing the story about the titanium kit I got from you last year. Mm-hmm. The new sequels had just come out. The Darton sequels had only been out for a few months. I bought the sequel 33, I believe it was. And mm-hmm. you had had a 31 in your hands at one of the shows that had passed by recently. And you had taken the 31, you measured it, you made a titanium kit for the 31. And I said, George, I want a titanium kit for the 33. You said, no problem. Same specs as the 31. You sent me the kit. I opened up the kit. I said, George, I think there's a problem here that these things don't fit. You said, no problem. Send me your bow. I'll take care of it. And it turns out they weren't all exactly the same, right? So it's like you said, your customer is your best friend. They're going to test things for you on a level that you couldn't do on your own. And when they find something wrong, you just have to be willing to make it right.
Right. I mean, it's like it is not my fault that you did, because I was told it was the case. But yeah. It's just like Voltec. Halfway through the year, I remember on the destroyer, halfway through the destroyer process, they changed the limbs. So the limbs, the cam lock screws are too short, because they move from Gordon to Barnsdale. And they're thicker.
But then again, I mean, maybe it's a good thing they changed it, because if they changed it, there must have been a reason.
Well, they always do. I mean, it's like you see with Hoyt. I used to be always 632 on all the flat screws they have on the cam mods. Guess what? They start sharing. Well, we're not turning everybody 632 now.
Well, figure it out for yourself.
Well, that's the reason I always write the note. This is the best we know by the time we have it. If anything changes, well, if it's not exactly right and you don't think we did right for you, set it back, I'll refund you. That's the end of it.
100%. Like I said, it's very, very easy. It's very headache free.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I got plenty of stories. We don't have to bore
them. No, we're not sharing. Well, I think I pretty much covered the entire crossbow notch now.
Yeah. So guys, for the listeners, moving into next week, one of the really cool things we're going to start talking about next are the lighted knock systems. And these
Will be fun.
It honestly is really fun, not just because of how they function, but because it was the first thing you made. And where these knocks came from it will knock your socks off. Because the technology,
it's a good story.
Yeah, the technology for these knocks did not come from the aero industry.
No, it does not.
And we'll leave it at that for now, because it is a really, really great story. And it's the reason they function as well as they do.
Yes,
so
I do.
If you guys are lighted knock users, that is an episode you are not going to want to miss. It's going to be a lot of fun. Until we get to that episode, if you have anything that we've covered, any questions that you have up until this point, go ahead, leave a comment down below. It helps us get you the information that you're looking for, but it also helps the podcast in a whole lot of ways. So if you have a moment, go on down to the bottom, leave a 5-star review. Let us know what you think. Let us know what you want to hear. And we thank you for joining us every week. You know, this has been a lot of fun. I think it's been, as we recorded this today, we took a little break. I think I took 3-week gap in between the episodes that we posted, and kind of give a break and let people kind of internalize everything. So moving forward, we'll get back onto it. So that's all I got for today, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks again for joining us. And remember, until next week, success is just a commitment away. Have a great week.